Good morning. It's the second hour of the 9 till noon show on this Wednesday morning, the 12th of April. Some of your comments, we were speaking to Mairead Ní Uaimhne about the Irish language before the 10 o'clock news, and a caller says, conversing with people from Connemara in Irish, it was total double Dutch trying to understand the Nóachtán radio, and I cannot because it's a totally different dialect. Another caller says, my kids have been doing Irish in school for years. They can't get a grip of it, and yet French was introduced a few weeks ago and they're all flying with it. What is it about Irish that's so difficult? Another caller says something similar. My cousin learnt more French than Irish as his teacher was more passionate. Look at Joe McHugh, a minister for Gaeltacht, hadn't a word of Irish. Enda Kenny sent him to Glencullum Kill. We Daniel learn it there too, although he probably sang for his supper there. And look at him now presenting Glorathera like he was a native speaker. That comment comes in from Kevin, who is in Dunlow. Good morning to you, Kevin. We spoke to Mary in the first hour. She was in Buncrana and she was being terrorised by people kicking at her door and banging on her windows at night. Caller says the same lads climbed onto a shop roof last week and threw tiles at cars. Another caller says, there are no fun in people banging on old people's doors and windows. With regards to the Biden visit, the DUP can put the US and EU under threat to the extent that they're coming with loads of money to try and get them back into Stormont. Donegal has been starved of funds for hundreds of years because they kept quiet and didn't cause any trouble for the Dublin government. And they're giving the promise of money to the DUP as well. That's an interesting comment there. Caller says, with all due respect to President Joe Biden, neither he, the US, nor Dublin can provide any real inspiration to the educationally and economically deprived communities in Northern Ireland. The economic benefits Biden is promising will go to the select wealthy few, not to the poor. There is simply no inspiration provided to the young in Craigan or in West Belfast, as shown by recent events. Little has changed, sadly, in poor communities over the past 25 years. The native language of Ireland provides an inspiration, but that's simply forbidden by those in power to be discussed, and the native language must to be hindered and stamped out where possible, so says Raymond. Now, with regards to the Irish language, a caller says, I think we need a similar TV show to the one in Ran na Ferishta at Réalty na Gaeltachta. In Glencullum Kill too, quite a few from Ranafast married there, and a Paul Mescal film was shot there. I also heard a review on Duolingo. As I found out, it's in the Donegal dialect, and that was the only gripe about it from a Cork reviewer. I came across and that's from Cuivín in Clonlea. I'm not sure if that's the same Kevin from Dunlow or a different Kevin from Dunlow. Caller says, some years ago I used to work in Galway. The job was outside. Many of my Connemara colleagues all spoke Gaelic. When I said we have a lot of Gaelic speakers in Donegal, he said, no, you don't. You have Scots Gaelic in Donegal. I felt totally insulted. The traffic discussion we had with Councillor Donal Mandy Kelly was a one that understandably got a lot of reaction. Caller says, nothing new. I honestly cannot see a new road easing the traffic. Another caller says, all happens is that money is wasted and all you have to do is look at the roads there at the moment. Another caller says, the traffic in Letterkenny has been a total disaster for years now. I live outside of the town on the Derry Road. Unfortunately, I have to go into Letterkenny at 6 to collect my child. Traffic is usually at a standstill from the Neil T. Blaney Road heading toward the Polestar. Yes, it is very busy there. In the evenings, I have a daughter who works in that particular area, and yeah, she finds herself caught in traffic pretty much every day trying to get home. Why don't Donegal County Council go into Derry and talk to the engineers there? They don't have the same backlogs, and roundabouts there work great, so says a caller. Another caller says, please chat about something that actually might happen. Fair enough. Our national roads throughout the county need a good lick of tar compared to other counties. They're in a bad state, so says a caller. Why are we not communicating with the 10T roads project for the bridge and new roads? They're in the planning process. In fact, that was highlighted on our news yesterday. We spoke to Councillor Jerry McMonagall for the 5 o'clock news last evening, and he made exactly that point, that the 10T is progressing and it's in the planning stages, and hopefully we may get the Bonagie link and bridge as part of that ongoing process. But it is a process. What Councillor Kelly is saying is he wants to have a meeting to make sure that there is joined up thinking locally and nationally. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It's 19 minutes past 10. Now, if you listen to Highland Radio News on a regular basis, you'll have heard several discussions over the past few months about the All-Ireland Rail Review. And you'll have heard us reference on more than one occasion that said review is complete, but it couldn't be published because it had to be cleared by the Irish government in Dublin, by the UK government in London, and also it had to be cleared by Stormont, and there wasn't a functioning Stormont executive to clear it. Now, judging by a story that's appeared on the Journal, it appears that is going to be published because Stormont is effectively going to be bypassed. Owen Dalton is a reporter at the Journal. He can tell us more. Owen, good morning.
Morning, Donald.
Owen, we in the Northwest, unsurprisingly, have been tracking this All-Ireland Rail Review for quite some time. We understand it has some very interesting things in it and we're awaiting its publication. Concern here has been that it'll sit on a shelf because of Stormont's inactivity. You believe that's not going to be the case?
Yes, so we have been covering this over the last couple of months, and most recently the Department of Transport has now told us that its officials are looking at recent legislation that was passed in the House of Commons as a way of publishing the report without Stormont needing to be sitting and working, I suppose. And the legislation that was passed was in November time. And that legislation was, I suppose, effectively, it was passed through the House of Commons partly to extend the deadline for Stormont to return, but also it contained details around the decision-making powers, particularly for civil servants who have effectively been running departments in the absence of elected politicians.
The review is going to have a number of very interesting things in it. It's going to have a lot to do with the Western Transport Corridor, with train services in Sligo, Mayo, Galway, Roscommon, etc. A lot of attention is going to be focused there. But obviously here in the Northwest, the big focus is going to be on north-south links and restoration of links, potentially between Letterkenny and Derry, and also talk about taking a line from Portadown back in via Strabane and in through Lifford and into Donegal that way. By your understanding of what's in the report, how concrete are those proposals? Are they written as actual proposals or are they written as vague aspirations?
Good question. I think that's the thing that applies to any report of this nature. Eamon Ryan has spoken about it as Transport and Climate Minister. He has spoken about this really a lot of times in the last couple of months. He seems to be quite eager for it. He spoke most recently to my colleague Ty McNally in the Journal in just the last fortnight, speaking about how these lines are, in a lot of cases, are existing. I know that's not necessarily the case with, say, the Letterkenny-Derry line, but that these lines, in a lot of cases, are existing. It's relatively cheap. We mean that in government terms, in terms of government budget, to actually bring them back into use. In terms of Ireland's climate targets, which have a 2030 deadline, this is looked at as a one way of trying to lessen emissions. The reason for that is because these lines at the moment are being spoke of in terms of the report, which we should say is not quite in draft form yet. It still looks to be a few weeks away from that. But the report seems to be putting these lines forward for freight, which then you would be looking at, I suppose, taking trucks, taking lorries off the road and instead transporting goods via train instead, with then the potential that these lines could then become open for passenger travel as well. And we have seen, I've heard this a number of times, and the figures show it as well, Ireland has seen, I suppose, a public transport boon, I guess, since the pandemic ended, which apparently is a bit of an outlier in Europe. For, I suppose, that might be partly due to public transport fares were halved in the last 12 months. But I suppose, in terms of the likelihood of this report being implemented, it does seem there is quite a bit of political will there. There is a organised coalition of what are pretty much voluntary rail groups. Yeah. And they put out a release about 2 months ago setting out that there were four options for, I suppose, proceeding with this report. And like, I suppose speaking to some of those rail groups this week, who, and they are across the country, I'm in Waterford myself, there are ones in the southeast, they're in the northwest, west, or in the north. One thing that some of their members were telling me this week is, look, they would hope to lobby to see if funding can be set aside for the upcoming budget. They don't want this to be a case of it sitting on a shelf. I think they also, speaking to some of those people, they believe that this It might have a better chance of getting this over the line when this government is possibly trying to seek, and particularly the Green Party, we know are under a lot of pressure at the moment via the eviction ban and the housing crisis. And that, I suppose, look, if it is a case that we are going to an election the next 18 months, they need to be able to show that they have stuff for the people who have voted for them. They need to show that they've been able to get stuff over the line. There is, a real hope, I guess, there from the coalition of rail groups that this can be, progressed within the next 18 months, yeah, with budget for later this year being the first step of the way.
Because the fickleness, really, of politics, and let's face it, the Greens' political future is going to be uncertain once there is a general election. Are the Green Party going to be involved in the next government, whatever the makeup of that new government may be? And it could well be that Eamon Ryan is involved in the next incoming government, and that he maintains his commitment to those lines. And he's been particularly strong on this idea of getting a line from Portadown through Strabane and into Donegal that way. And he's mentioned that in the Dáil on more than one occasion over the course of the past year. But equally so, if the Greens are not involved in the next government, and if Eamon Ryan is not in a position of power, then perhaps that big champion is not going to be there. And being honest about it, whereas Eamon Ryan can make some positive noises over the next 18 months, when it comes to actual decisions and funding decisions about rail investment based on this report, that's not 18 months down the line. That's probably minimum 3 to 4 years down the line.
Yeah, and I think just even on that, I mean, one thing I suppose some of those rail groups I was speaking to, they were nervous about is that some of these proposals that we understand are contained in the report are controversial, I guess, and maybe not so much actually in the Northwest, but we're particularly in the Galway to Mayo, it would be Attenroy to Claremorris, those two towns, and then also a Wexford to Waterford line. There's been a controversy around those lines because they are essentially looking to reverse what has become a bit of a policy over the last decade in those parts of the country of converting rail lines to greenway cycle routes for tourism purposes. And this report looks to, I suppose, now upend that proposal. There's been a lot of unhappiness, towards that from people who, I guess, wanted to proceed down the greenway route. That is something that the rail groups have mentioned, I suppose, in the last couple of weeks, as they would be afraid that suddenly some of these plans could be upended if basically no work gets going on them. And if this does be allowed, if this is allowed to sit on a shelf for the next 18 months or so, I suppose just in terms of what's happening in the immediate couple of months is that the Department of Transport in Dublin has told me that it is looking to potentially put out the report, a draft of it, for public consultation in quarter two. So that's relatively soon. And that would be in case they have to do an environmental screening assessment, which is really, I suppose, it's an environmental impact procedure that has to be done. They said it's not a guarantee they'll have to do such an assessment. I imagine they will have to on the basis of the work that is involved here, because this is stretching along a couple of dozen kilometres in different parts of the country, if not more. So you're looking, I suppose, we could see a draft of the report published in the coming weeks. And then from there, people will be able to make submissions on it as well. But we'll have a very good idea of what shape it is taking.
As you said, some of the lines are perhaps more ready than others to be recommissioned, particularly lines where there are either still tracks in the ground, or at the very least, the track lines are there and, importantly, the land is in government or state ownership. We're going to get a situation, if you're trying to develop new lines, particularly in an area like Donegal, where there hasn't been a rail network per se in over 40 years, you're potentially talking about a massive compulsory purchase in some cases, land purchase, starting from scratch. Almost one would have thought the government's going to take the path of least resistance, which would be prioritise the ones that will get done relatively easily, and the ones that would be really difficult, that would involve that huge infrastructural investment, put those on the long finger. And the fear would be perhaps that Donegal and the North West will find itself very much on the long finger.
Yeah, and I think that's a very realistic possibility as well. And it's probably something that I can imagine a lot of people in the Northwest would be guarded about. I always think we regularly see memes and the likes going around online of the old rail network, and I suppose how Donegal has been impacted in that. I think, funnily enough, if we go back to what we were talking about, the Greenway cycle routes there, there is a bit of a roadmap per se in terms of how local authorities and how state bodies can do these large scale CPOs in the modern era. And that's, again, I'm looking at, I know, like you go back to, say, Waterford, a massive CPO was done about 10 years ago there to set up a really quite lengthy of several dozen kilometres Greenway route. You're looking at something like that, but you're right, it'll be on a larger scale. There'll be a lot of negotiation, but there is a fear that it can be put on the long finger. I think that's that can't be denied either.
I mean, I certainly remember I came up here to work, coincidentally, from Waterford in 1990. And I walked over to Plunkett Station to buy a train ticket from Waterford to Donegal. And I went to the ticket office, and the person behind the ticket office pointed to the map and said, "You see the map behind me?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "You see that big, huge white spot up in the top left?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "That's Donegal." And I ended up getting a train to Dublin and a bus from Dublin. So yeah, I mean, and it's been, I mean, there haven't been trains running in Donegal for many, many years. As you said, the Greenway one is interesting because, I mean, a lot of the Greenways and the Waterford Greenway pretty much built on what was the old Waterford to Cork railway line. And I'm old enough to remember trains running on that line, actually. Particularly, they used to run to Ballinacorty, to the big factory that was there in Ballinacorty, just beyond Clonay. And I would well remember freight trains. I believe I was actually on the last passenger train between, I think, Durrow and Dungarvan. I was on the last passenger train that travelled that line. And I was about three at the time. But, I mean, you know, that whole line is now a Greenway. So even if someone were to say the Waterford-Cork line should be reinstated, it's not going to happen now. And maybe the Greenway thing is, I mean, they're developing Greenways in Donegal at the moment. None, as I understand, well, some, there is one actually that's going from Derry to Newton Cunningham. And that would be roughly where there would have been lines in the past. So there's going to be a lot of planning involved in that. Will there be a provision in this report, do you believe, to sort of allow for planning for CPOs, allow for planning for land acquisitions before those decisions are made? Or, you know, will we see maybe indicative routes and all that being discussed first before we get into the nitty-gritty of do you actually put in the money?
Yes, that's a good question. I definitely think there has to be some indication of a route. I suppose, look, in terms of the Athenry to Clare Morris for Galway Mayo and the Wexford to Waterford line, the routes are there. So, you know, like I suppose, like we have that idea. It might be a bit premature to try to do something similar for particularly in the Northwest. I think just in terms of, go back to what you're saying about the Greenways there as well, like I know with the Wexford to Waterford one, and now provision has been made, I think, to do a draft feasibility study of an alternative Greenway route to, I suppose, ease the tensions that have been there. And similarly, there is another line which would be Waterford to New Ross, and New Ross would be a town in South Wexford. And I suppose, like, talking to some of the rail groups, they haven't been too, how would I put it, they're not too nonplussed about, I guess, they're nonplussed about losing that line, partly because, and this is something that you'll find with some rail lines along the way, it could well have been like similar to the Dora line that you were speaking of there. Some of them can be quite curved, and from what I understand, it means the trains can't really pick up that much of a speed, which you really need if you're going to be trying to make be a passenger travel or freight travel an attractive option in the years to come. You need these trains to be able to go at a pretty good speed. And that's similarly, I think part of this rail review is also looking at trying to increase speed on your lines for Dublin to Belfast and possibly also Dublin to Cork.
And what's the status of Waterford Rosslare at the moment? I mean, that's been decommissioned for some time now, hasn't it? Or will trains get back on that again, do you think?
Yeah, so that's been decommissioned for some time. And this was a route that was earmarked for a Greenway. And I would have sat in on, as in earlier days in journalism, I sat in on council meetings where councillors in neighbouring counties were voting to allow their rail line to be, I suppose, decommissioned and converted to Greenway use. And that's still going ahead. Because again, I guess there, it might not be as feasible to kind of recommission those lines for train use. But in case of, I suppose, War for Wexford, like key here is Rosslare.
Yeah.
Rosslare, your report, that has become, in light of Brexit, a really key strategic point. And that's not just in words, that's in legislation as well, for Ireland. And I suppose particularly, I look for transport of goods, especially. And so what I suppose is now being looked at is using that line connecting, I guess, Rosslare to Waterford to bring that back into train use. It has been out of use, I believe, for just over a decade now.
Yeah. Owen, it's a fascinating issue, and we'll be discussing this a lot more over the course of the coming weeks and months. But for the moment, Owen Dalton, reporter at The Journal, thanks very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Councillor Michael McClafferty joins us on the line. Michael, good morning to you.
Good morning, Dolan. Morning, listeners.
You've been listening to the discussion on rail, and certainly you're based in an area where there's a lot of talk about Greenway developments and the Burton Port, Letterkenny Greenway, very, very much a live entity and going ahead. Do you believe that we will see rail return to Donegal, or is this a pipe dream?
It's a possibility, Donald, and into the future at some stage. When I say into the future, it's a possibility into years and years ahead, into late years ahead at this stage. Like, we're struggling at the minute to get a greenway done up here by Muckish to get it finished, which is going to be the sounds of it's going to take years the way it's going. So, I mean, the actual fact of rail coming to Donegal or rail coming to Ireland as such is basically going to be a long, long way off anyway. And look, I'm not against the rail. I think if it did come, it would help. It would be an advantage. It would be another added tourism thing and so on. It would be good for medical reasons and so on. People that needed to travel that way and all that, it would be helpful, obviously. Not everybody suited to care. Not everybody suited to planes when you're sick and so on. And it would be helpful that way, providing it's connecting to all the relevant towns and that type of thing. But, Donald, really, the health and safety is commanded here as well, big time here. For example, where I live down here, outside Dunfanaghy, you're well aware of, the area that is, the... If you're going from the Letterkenny side into the Fanny, the first place you pass there, I suppose the first person that you pass, if you like, once you go past the old McElhenish garage, now soon to be a brewery, into the future, hopefully, is the next place to stop then is the Lake House. You go past the Lake House nursing home, you have a footpath there for maybe 100 yards or something, takes you on round anyway, roughly to where the old Port Nicolas Hotel used to be before it was tunnelled years ago for a future development and so on. But then from the Port Nicolas Hotel area, landmark right on through Port Nicolas, where there's probably upwards of 60, 70 houses there at the minute, built in the last 20 years on the left hand side. Everybody's familiar with on and then to Dunfanaghy Town. You have no footpaths. Unfortunately, this stretch of road as well, which is 1056, a number of people have lost their lives here as well down through the years and various situations, unfortunately, for those and their families. But yet, Donald, as people are trying there long, long before my time, going back 25, 30 years. When they seen this situation developing, and particularly when the Port Nicolas Hotel was going good, the immediate need for a footpath. And this footpath still is not forthcoming. We were a delegation there in Dublin there, myself and fellow councillors, 12 of us all together, were up with the TAA there at the 8th of December, lobbying for Port Nicolas as well as many other roads and various other ideas and so on around the place. We're told it couldn't happen because it's outside the speed limit. It's the same situation there this morning with Jimmy Cavanagh, although he was trying for active travel.
Yes.
Like, we were trying for active travel as well. But again, because it's outside the speed limit and our situation here in Dunfanaghy, they won't do it. This is ridiculous. Eamon Ryan is going to be out of... Well, he'll either be in power or out of power in 18 months' time, as you alluded to yourself there a while ago, which remains to be seen, obviously, either way. But the point is, they need to look at the health and safety end of it here first. What is more important, footpaths in Dunfanaghy, a footpath out by Woodland School there, or any other place that is asked for, that really don't, in all fairness, for the likes of Eamon Ryan being a Minister of Transport, all it would take, I'm pretty sure, is a stroke of a pen and say, right, boys and girls, let that carry on. Instead of that, we're talking about rail that could mightn't happen for the next 30 years or mightn't happen at all.
And the point you're making is, the point you're making, Michael, is if we can't get it together to actually sort a footpath on a busy walking route between Port Nicolas and Dunfanaghy, what chance do we actually have of organising a full rail service linking Donegal and Letterkenny and Derry, or linking Letterkenny to Strabane and Portadown via Lifford? If we can't get a couple of miles of footpath, what chance do we have of getting a rail system?
Well, Exactly, Donald, we have none, because, for example, the rail, as far as I recall from memory, went off around here. Recall from history that it went off around here in the Fulcarry area around 68, 69. I believe the last train went, and that was the end of it. The end of it. Then Ian McGarvey would be better.
Yeah, I think it may have been. I have it in my head. It was 59. Was the last the
maybe,
rail
sorry,
services?
Maybe, sorry,
I have 59 sorry, in my head for the rail services in Donegal, and I wasn't around myself in those days now, but. I think it was in around about 59. But Michael, it's a point well made, and thank you very much indeed for making it. That's Councillor Michael McClafferty there. Now, let's go to Derry. You'll have heard there was 4 suspected pipe bombs discovered in the city cemetery in Derry. They were found there yesterday in the same area where clothes worn by participants in the parade on Monday, which led to some incidents between marchers and police. Clothes were discarded there and burnt. Joined on the line by Father Michael Canny. He's the Vicar General of the Diocese of Derry. Father Michael, good morning.
Good morning.
Father Michael, obviously the last thing we want to hear is hear about bombs being discovered in the sacred precincts of a cemetery.
Well, Donald, this is an annual event every Easter Monday for so many, many, many years now. This event takes place, and I personally have now come to call it the annual commemoration of disrespect for our dead, as opposed to commemoration of the dead, because every year it ends up with something happening in the cemetery and the surrounds of the cemetery. And, of course, this is a deliberate attempt by these people to lure in the police with a view to injuring them or, indeed, maybe even killing them. And they're using the cemetery, which is a very special place in the hearts of all of us, and particularly around about the Easter time when people go to put flowers on their loved one's grave or for whatever reason. And these people, manipulate these young children to lure in the police with a view to kill them and, of course, or injure them. And obviously the pipe bombs and the petard bombs were part of that.
In terms of the, as you say, there are events each year, and in fairness, there are Republican commemorations take place, and they do take place respectfully, and the dead are remembered. But it does appear that some of the commemorations, particularly at some times, they do tend to be hijacked to make a contemporary political point and to make that political point through the use of force.
Well, the reality is that this particular one on Easter Monday in the city cemetery in Derry here has always, for the last number, significant number of years, has always called trouble. Now, there are events on Easter Sunday all over the country, and they pass off very peacefully, and they're done with great respect for the dead and remembering and commemoration, which you know is to be commended and supported. But this one is always with a view to police, with a view to cause a mayhem and it doesn't promote. They try to use the opportunity to maybe to highlight some political cause. But of course, the reality is all it is doing is just bringing the city, bringing the Craigan area into disrepute, into the headlines for the very wrong reason, and isn't furthering the cause of Irish unity one iota.
Have you at any point had a chance to have discussions yourself with the organisers of the Easter Monday event?
No, I personally haven't been involved with them for a long number of years now, but I know previous years that my colleague and others have been involved with them. And I think that maybe most right-thinking people say that they have made up their minds what to do, and they use all people who maybe go with well intent to negotiate, to try to get some organisation of good sense around this place. But I think that they use it, manipulate it just for the sake of publicity and to achieve this end. And I know last year and previous years, a lot of people were actively involved in all sorts of things right up to the wire, but at the same time, then the all promises were broken, all sides. So it seems to be futile at this stage. But unfortunately, I suppose we still can't give up efforts. But they seem to want to use this opportunity to lure in police with a view to killing or maiming police. And of course, in the process, they have total disrespect for the fact that they're also maybe manipulating these children who also could get killed or badly injured with petrol bombs or pipe bombs.
And the reality is, given the pictures that we've seen and given the fact that young people, some of them no older than children, are involved, I mean, and several of those in the front line, as it were. I mean, the Good Friday Agreement was 10 years and more before they were born, so it isn't as though those young people grew up during Troubles and are responding to their experience of the Troubles, because, I mean, they were born in a very different era to the era that you were born in and worked in.
Yeah, well, these are, as we can see from the pictures on television screen and our newspapers, these are very young children, and that's why I say that these are obviously people who organise these events are using and manipulating these young children so as to lure in the police for something more sinister. So in actual fact, it is just, my mind, it is a pure evil, because first of all, they're planning to kill or to maim or to injure and manipulating children. So it is certainly a very evil intent from the word get-go.
You'd be hoping, I'm sure, for a community response to this. I mean, you'll be in regular contact with community leaders in the Craigan. Is there something that could be done on that level? I know there have been discussions at community level in the past, and you've said perhaps there hasn't always been good faith. Do you hold any hope that after another Easter Monday of incidents as we've seen this year, that maybe discussions between the community and the parade organisers will maybe lead to some changes for next year?
Well, one lives in hope, but I suppose we live in hope and we die in despair. But the reality is that I think that down through the years, there has been so much engagement from all sorts of sources and all sorts of people with these people, but it has never ended in anything other than chaos and mayhem. As a matter of fact, this year, perhaps maybe, was maybe, while it wasn't a good end, was maybe perhaps one of the better endings in a number of years, because the police didn't fall into their trap. And as soon as the first petrol bomb was thrown, the police made good their escape. Yeah. And of course, I suppose, to some extent, frustrated their plans and their designs, which means then they had to abandon their bombs. So I suppose the police tactics, rather than falling into their trap, the police did the opposite, which I think is in fairness, was good sense on their part.
And as well as that, the police...
From the point of view of the organisers, yeah, it was certainly an attempt to try to bring in police so as to engage with them.
And the police were making it clear from Thursday, Friday of last week that they believed this was going to happen. So they obviously did have intelligence, and based on their own past experience as well.
That, of course, these pipe bombs and this sort of petrol bombs that are required don't grow out of the ground or fall out of the sky all of a sudden. So they obviously had good intelligence leading them to know that this was about to happen, and they didn't fall into the trap. So, and I suspect that maybe it frustrated their plans, of the organisers to some extent. But nevertheless, the very fact that there was an intent there, I think we have to call it for what it is.
Father Michael Canley, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. That's Father Michael there, the Vicar General of the Diocese of Derry. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. As we know, US President Joe Biden is on the island. He's in Belfast at the moment. He's making a keynote speech at Belfast University today. And then over the next number of days, he will carry out engagements in Dublin and in Mayo and in Louth. He'll not be in Donegal. There had been some hope that he might have been attracted to Donegal. We know a number of high-profile people, Congressman Brendan Boyle and others, were trying to make that happen, but sadly, it didn't happen. Now, I've got two people on Zoom to have a discussion with this morning, and who better to speak to than our resident historian on the 9 till noon show, Dr. Joe Kelly. Joe, good morning to you.
Imagine why you could Donald with the luck days, Jack. Good morning to yourself and all those in Highland Radio.
Imagine what, Joe. It's a pleasure as always. We know that Joe Biden has family connections in Louth and in Mayo, but how important do you believe his Irish connections are to them? Because we have this habit, whenever a US president comes, we always say, oh, there must be an election coming. He's trying to go for that big Irish-American vote. I mean, you know, we can be a bit cynical about this, but do you believe that there is a genuine wish to get back to Ireland on Joe Biden's part? We know it's not his first visit here.
Yeah, exactly. He was here as vice president in 2016, June 2016. Look, as it goes, and most commentators would accept that, you know, Joe Biden's Irishness has been very, very important to himself as an individual. It's not just as a political stepping stone for the Irish electorate in America, but actually his Irishness and his concept of who he is and his own self-identity is very much based on his Irishness. And he's talked about that throughout his whole political life. And in fact, some, you know, lecturers and professors would argue that he's the most Irish American president that there ever has been, even more Irish than John F. Kennedy, who got to be a president by you know, family connections, etc. Joe went through the hard way, so to speak, and brought his Irishness with him, his determination. And, you know, it's very interesting, the two very things that the people of Ireland, like his family left in 1851, the two very things that the poor people of Ireland left and immigrated, be it to America or anywhere in the world, were two things, the two Fs, family and faith. Mm. And here he's coming back, family-wise, to his roots and also to his faith. He's visiting Knock, and his faith is something that, he, you know, he's a Catholic president, just in the same way that John F. Kennedy was. So, look, those two very important to him. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think he's been dishonest or disingenuous or trying to use it for political capital. He loves Ireland. He loves who he is because of his Irish ancestry. Yeah. And that goes with the 32 other million Irish Americans that are over in America.
And speaking of faith, we're told that his great-great-great-grandfather sold the brick that built Ballina Cathedral, and the money from the sale of that brick paid the passage to America. Is that true?
Yes, that's true. His great-great-grandfather, the passage was paid for by his father. That would be Joe Biden's great-great-great-grandfather in 1851. And he sold, I think it was 27,000 bricks to build the cathedral in Ballina. And it was the sale of those bricks that paid the passage to bring them to America. And in fact, Joe's relations in Ballina, Joe Blewett is his name, he has actually built a stage outside the cathedral, or in the cathedral, sorry, so that Joe Biden can give a talk in the cathedral, tying it back to his own history. So that's back to the family and the faith. And in the same way in Louth, I think the Louth connection's a very strong connection as well. And that's his great-grandfather was Owen Finnegan, and he emigrated from the Cooley Peninsula. And again, his aunt would have been very, very strong in her Irish and dislike of England, believe it or not. And if you read his biography, Promises to Keep, he has some very interesting analogies in which he describes how he grew up. For example, his mother was with him on holiday one time, and she found out that the Queen was actually Queen Elizabeth II slept in the room that she was given, and she refused to sleep there. And then he mentions as well in the same book that it was unfortunate that he has an English name. His father was English.
Yeah.
That he's so proud of his Irish. But, and his aunt said, look, I know your daddy is an Englishman, but you know something, he's still a good man.
Yeah.
So like you could see kind of some of the Irish anti-English sentiment growing through there. But look, he's here obviously on a personal capacity. There's no doubt about that. And I think this is a highlight for himself and his own life. But he's also here in a political capacity. There's a serious business to be done here as well politically.
As you've said, the Louth connections and the Mayo connections. A big search for Donegal connections was made in recent weeks, and the Donegal connection inevitably has been found. So I'd like to say we also have with us on Zoom this morning Kayleigh Beelan, who's a research manager with the Irish Family History Centre. Kayleigh, a very good morning to you.
Morning.
Kayleigh, you have found evidence that there is indeed a Donegal connection with Joe Biden. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, there is. It's a really strong and very interesting connection, actually. And it was a total surprise to us. So this is on the president's maternal line as well. And this is his Scanlon family. So the president's, if you can keep track of all this, because he has a lot of Irish ancestry, but it's his second great-grandmother was a woman called Catherine Scanlon. And her father was Anthony Scanlon. So we're right back at the start of the 1800s now. And he was a Mayo man himself, but he worked in the Irish Coast Guard. So because of that, he was based all over Ireland. And a huge portion of his career, he was based in Donegal. And this would have been the very start of the Irish Coast Guard. So we're talking 1820s, 1830s, really different to what we would see it as now. And so the president's great, great, great uncle was actually born in one of the Coast Guard houses in Donegal. Now, you know, to be discovered which one yet, because there were, I think, 11 contemporary houses. But this was a very important part of the country. As a Coast Guard, if you were stationed in Donegal, that was really, you'd made it. And this was, the Coast Guard had been set up in England since, I think, 1805. But these were the first years of the Coast Guard in Ireland. So to be trusted in an area where you were, I mean, you were stopping smugglers coming up from the north. You were protecting shipwrecks. You know, you were saving people's lives at sea. So the president's ancestors they would have been very important people in the Donegal area, and they would have known everybody, you know, around where they lived, because this was, as you said, the weather today, you know, typical of this, the winds would be battering in. That would have been an everyday 24-hour job. And we're talking boats in the 1820s. So slightly more difficult than now. You know, you don't have an engine, you don't have electric lights, you're going out with your torch and you're hoping that you can fight off effectively the pirates. So it's a very strong connection. We know that the family were there for a number of years because they were settled in the house, the children were born there, and then they eventually emigrated to the States. So we found your connection. Yeah.
And I believe that evidence of that's going to be presented to Joe Biden over the course of his visit. He's going to be appraised of those particular links.
He is indeed, yeah. We're gonna privately present the information to the president, but a few extra pieces, bits and pieces, so that you know, if he ever wants to dig into it more, he can certainly go and check it out himself. There's a lot that we're, you know, going to discuss publicly, but there's a few pieces we want to save for the president. Yeah.
Well, Joe Kelly, that's interesting news. Were you aware that the Donegal connection was so stark as far as Joe Biden was concerned?
Wasn't aware at all, and congratulations on that bit of research. That's amazing. Even to go back that far in the Coast Guard, very, very interesting. And again, just shows you how diverse our own history is and the fact that we're able to connect all these places, Mayo, Louth, Donegal. And it says a lot about what's available in our roots. This is back to understanding who we are. And we're very, very small island, but have a massive, massive political impact worldwide.
Absolutely.
So well done. Mm. Yeah.